Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome to Sports Urban Legend, along with my co-host Macaulay Matthew. I'm, of course, William Mamo. What's up, Mac? How you doing? Hold up 1 second. Let's, I think Mac is here now. What's up, Mac?
Hey, how's it going?
Not much, man. Mr. Linking you up. I left the show with, the song "We Don't Need Another Hero."
Oh, okay.
Can you guess why?
For Max Scherzer?
For Mad Max Scherzer, perhaps?
Yeah.
I guess you are correct.
Yep.
But, yes. So that should give you a clue what we're going to leave the show with. So, again, ladies and gentlemen, thank you all for checking out this episode of Sports Urban Legend, along with my co-host, Macaulay Matthew, the man you heard right there. I'm, of course, William Ramo. And on today's show, spoiler alert, we are talking about the huge metamorphic seismic change that the Mets have just done. We're going to get into that. A move I never thought in a million years would have happened. But I guess, you like the saying goes, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So now the nemesis of the Mets is now joining forces with the Mets. We're going to get into that. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about, you know, the lockout, how it affects both the Mets and the Yankees and all the other teams in Major League Baseball. We're going to also preview the Giants and Jets series. Of course, Giants, they are going to be in Miami against the Dolphins, while the Jets host your nemesis, the Eagles. We'll also talk about the tailspin that the Knicks are on right now, especially at home. Knicks are not only under 500 at home, but under 500 for the first time all year at 11-12. We're going to dive into that as well. We'll also talk about, you know, the latest stuff that's going on in WWE and their new Day One pay-per-view event. And also all those stuff that's going on in, the world of wrestling. And, yes, we'll even, you know, on this show we talk sports and entertainment. And, of course, you know, we're going to talk about a franchise, a film franchise, a cartoon franchise that's very near and dear to our hearts ever since we were kids. And, of course, I'm talking about the new Ghostbuster Afterlife film. What are our thoughts on this new movie? Is it another letdown? Is it a redemption film? Check it out. Check out this whole episode. And me and you, as always, we'll give you our brutally honest thoughts on everything, basically, we're going to cover here. So if you'd like to talk about any of these topics and more, we'd love to hear from you. The number is 563-999-3529. That's 563-999-3529. So feel free to talk about any of these topics you'd like to talk about. We'd love to hear from you, whether you agree or disagree with us. You agree with Mac, you disagree with me, or vice versa, hey, the floor is yours. But with that said, hey, let's just dive right into it. Let's just dive right into it. And, of course, I'm talking about the huge blockbuster signing of Mad Max Scherzer coming to the last team. Out of all the 30 teams, I did not think Max Scherzer was ever going to come here. Like, those rumors, this guy wasn't, he vetoed a trade to come to New York, you know, and wanted to stay out west. And, of course, he went to the Dodgers, where he, of course, went 7-0, you know, as a Dodger. And, I wasn't happy about it because I wanted that guy to be on the team, but, hey, if he don't want to come here, I don't want no guy who don't want to play for my team, you know, and help my team win. You know, it is what it is. But, you know, money talks. You know, we gave him a record deal, 3-year, $130 million, which shattered Garrett Cole, a pitcher Macaulay might have heard of once or twice, you know, the third pitcher in baseball and in New York, if you want to be more specific.
True.
You know, the ace of the Yankees, you know. Since, you know, he's not pitching on the Mets, so, you know, he has to be third fiddle, you know, in his own town, but he's a good pitcher, you know. But in any case, we'll talk about him more a little bit later. Macaulay wants to, you know, give his, you know, thoughts about, you know, his Yankees, of course. So we'll get into that. But yeah, man, Max Scherzer, man, this guy who's tormented the Mets, you know, for so many years with the Nationals. I mean, he tormented the Mets like Piazza tortured Clemens in a Mets uniform. That's how bad Scherzer dominated the Mets. I mean, he was scary, man. Like, out of all the pitchers in the baseball, that scared me. That was the guy right there, you know. And, yes, he even threw a no-hitter against the Mets in 2015, which, you know, obviously I haven't forgotten about that. But, you know, yeah, man, this guy's a bulldog, man. I mean, he's a tough dude, you know, to face, you know. I mean, the only pitcher, you know, I thought that was better than him in the game is DeGrom, you know. And now you have this dream matchup of these two Cy Young Award winners, multiple Cy Young Award winners joining forces. You know, Scherzer has three. DeGrom has two. You know, he got robbed from Bauer last year, you know, in the pandemic shortened season. But, yeah, man, this is like the fourth time that the Mets in their history has had multiple Cy Young Awards in the same rotation. You know, they had Pedro and Tom Glavine, you know, during the Manaea era. Then for that one season in 08, they had Pedro and Johan Santana. Another trade, another move other than along with Pedro that people didn't think Mets was going to get, but they did get those moves done. And then trying to think, who was the other one? I think there was another one. There was another pitcher that they had with two Cy Youngs. I can't remember off the top of my head. But yeah. Oh, I think it was Brett Saberhagen and Brett Sager. Oh, no. Brett Saberhagen. Well, Brett Saberhagen did pitch with the Mets, but that was before that. He pitched with somebody else in another team, probably the Twins, before he came to the Mets. But yeah, there's been only a few times in history that that you've had two multiple Cy Young Award winners on the same staff, and it just solidifies the Mets is the greatest pitching franchise of all time. And you know, it's not gonna mean nothing if they don't knock in these runs. And to do that, they made a big move last week. Signed Sterling Marte. They also signed, you know, Escobar as well, you know, to prove the defense and, you know, his versatility. And then they also signed a hard-nosed guy in Canna. Basically, all these guys that they signed are good character guys. You know, it should be a good season for the Mets. And hopefully if they could sign Chris Bryant, if we do get this lockout eventually stopped, you know, hopefully they can sign, you know, Chris Bryant to help out this, you know, this team and hopefully be the final piece of the puzzle. And then they got to improve the rotation as well. So, yeah, the Mets have a few more stuff to do. And then, of course, they need a manager. They need to hopefully get an experienced manager, hopefully a Buck Showalter. Let me see, who's the other person I was thinking off the top of my head? Mike Scioscia, Bruce Bochy. But, yeah, we'll see what the Mets are going to do. You know, what's your thoughts on the state of the Mets and this Scherzer signing, Mac?
Well, I think it's a great signing. You know, Scherzer is one of the top pitchers in the game. You know, you can make the case he's the second best pitcher in the game, although I still think Gerrit Cole is the second best pitcher in the game. But, you know.
Who do you think is the first?
Well, of course, DeGrom. I mean, come on. I mean, you already know that.
But I could have sworn when Gerrit Cole signed with you you guys, you automatically put him on first ahead of DeGrom.
I did, but you know, after some consideration, I will put DeGrom in front of Gerrit Cole. I will say that. I could say, but yeah, you can make the case at least that Scherzer is one of the top five pitchers. Because mm-hmm. there's still some other pitchers I think that might be in front of Scherzer. You know, even the guy, who's the guy, the kid in Minnesota?
Barrios?
I think so.
He got traded to Blue Jays and then signed a huge extension.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Who won the Cy Young this year in the American League? Wasn't it a Blue Jay pitcher?
Who did? That's a good question. Was it Robbie Ray? I think it was Robbie Ray. Let me just make sure. I think it was
Robbie Ray, right? Blue Jays, right, yeah.
Yeah, Robbie Ray, where did he sign? Did he sign with the Mariners? Let me double check where he, because he left that team.
Yeah.
I think he signed with the Mariners, because yeah. Mets was one of the teams that was interested in him either. I mean, also I should say. Yeah, it looks like that's the case. Let me just
okay.
Confirm that. I think he did sign with the Mariners.
Okay.
Let's see here.
Yeah, it looks like he did.
Yeah, he did. He signed with the Mariners.
So, but you could make a case. I mean, Scherzer is one of the top five pitchers in the game right now. And, you know, he is older. You know, he's 37 years
old. Absolutely.
So, age is definitely going to be a factor. And we did see him. Yeah, he had that dead arm in that
mm-hmm.
in the playoff, you know, with the Dodgers. Although now he's blaming he's saying that the Dodgers didn't use him enough. That's why he had the dead arm. But mm-hmm. shouldn't that be the opposite?
Yeah, normally
I mean,
it would be.
If they don't pitch you that often, you should have a rested arm, not a dead arm, right?
Yeah, that would normally be the case. But I guess he feels that. You know, he would have warmed his arm would have been more warmed up to this possibility because he has done it before in the past. I mean, he even did it in the other series where he closed out the game in the playoffs, and then of course, you know, his epic season with the Nationals, much to my chagrin, winning that title in 2019. So,
I'm not buying that because the pitchers they should be warming up, they should be practicing on their off days anyway. You know,
yeah, but,
to keep their arms alive. So I'm not buying that.
But I think he went on short rest. You know, he was gonna try to go on short rest to pitch that game, and he, you know, unfortunately for him and the Dodgers, he wasn't able to. That was like the first time he couldn't answer the call.
Yeah, so he's saying he had a dead arm. I mean, when you have a dead arm, that's because they overuse you. But he's saying they didn't use him enough. I mean, that doesn't sound right.
I mean, I think they, you know, he's pitched a lot of innings, you know. I mean, he pitched 180 innings, I think, this year. And he's always been a durable. He always pitches a bunch of stuff. I guess it must have added up to it. And then he felt he wasn't warmed up enough to do it. But, yeah.
Well, but that's not what he's saying. He's saying that they didn't use him enough. They're saying
yeah.
that he anticipated pitching more and the Dodgers didn't do that. So he's saying the opposite of what. Of what should have occurred. Yeah. So
right.
I don't know if we're buying that, but we'll see. You know, we'll mm-hmm. see. You know, if that has any effect when he does pitch. But that's if he does pitch this upcoming season, because now you have this lockout, you know, that's going on right now. So, but it's a good pickup for the Mets. I mean, they paid a lot of money to get
mm-hmm.
him.
Yep.
And hopefully, you know, he can bring his great pitching to the Mets. And it'll be a great 1-2 combo with him and DeGrom when healthy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see.
I think this in Mets history of signings, where would you rank this signing so far? Potential.
Yeah, I mean it's definitely up there. I mean it's up there with the Glavin signing,
mm-hmm.
up there with the Pedro signing. You know,
mm-hmm.
and those were also great pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely up there, I would say.
I agree with you. I think it definitely has the potential to be the best one because, I mean, this guy was unlikely of signing. I mean, Pedro and Glavin weren't weren't likely to sign either. I mean, yeah, I mean, Glavine was a Met killer, just like Scherzer was, you know.
Yeah.
In that free agency, and I didn't think any of those guys was going to come to the Mets. I didn't think Santana was going to get traded over here. You know, everybody was saying that, you know, the Mets, you know, the you know, that he was going to get traded to the Yankees, you know. And, you know, Mets, you know, prevailed in that sense. But
I actually think the Santana signing was actually better than all these three signings that you're talking
about.
It
was a trade, though. With the
that's right. Yeah, you're right about that, yeah.
With the Twins.
Well, that deal, I should say. Mm-hmm. You know, getting him was, you know, because this guy was still in his prime, but unfortunately, you know, injuries caught up to him and, you know, shortened his career. But, yeah, getting him at the time, I mean, you know, could have been one of the best pitchers in baseball.
Mm-hmm. Plus, through the only no-hitter in history.
Yeah, through that one hit, that no-hitter, you know, for you guys. But, yeah, if not for injuries, he definitely could have, you know, still be pitching even now, maybe. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Possibly.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this Scherzer trade, the Scherzer signing, this is, like, this legit has the chance of being the best free agent signing, especially for a pitcher. I mean, because, I mean, he just finished up the best performance for a pitcher in with a massive contract. Like, he legit lived up to the hype for the Nationals. He changed the whole culture, you know, of the Nationals, and he elevated the games of Strasburg and in Corbin, you know, on those teams and helped propel them to their elusive championship 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Hopefully the Mets can have their curse snapped, 35 championship season snap, so, which will be 36 if we do have this season coming up. The time will tell. And then, yeah, there was rumors that Granderson might even be the, you know, might have consideration of being the next manager, or Joe Espada, a guy who used to be in the Yankees organization and all this other stuff.
Yeah, I don't know if we mentioned this, but on the Yankees side, we now have, maybe we did talk about it, Luis Rojas as a third base coach, former Met manager, right?
No, Joe Espada, he was, he used to work with the...
I'm talking about Luis Rojas. No.
Oh, yeah.
I'm changing the subject.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm saying that, I don't know if we talked about this, but Luis Rojas is not a third base coach. I don't know if we talked about it we might have mentioned it a couple weeks ago, right? Actually, no, this just happened. Didn't this just happen? As Luis Rojas is third base coach for the Yankees?
He just signed as the third base coach with the Yankees, I should say. I don't remember if we talked about it the last time. But,
a couple weeks ago, right? November, around November 15, I think?
Yeah, something like that. But,
yeah,
you know, congrats to them. You know,
yeah.
We should have less pressure on them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, hopefully he makes better decisions with us than he did with you guys. So, but we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, if he crosses the Yankees a game, you know, getting a Yankee caught, thrown out against the Red Sox, his tenure will be a lot shorter than his net worth. I could tell you that much.
Well, he was only with you guys for what, a year? One season, right?
No. Well, actually, he was the manager for 2 years, but he's been with the Mets organization for like 14 years. You know,
well, as a coach, I mean, you know.
But yeah, as the manager, he's been a manager with the Mets for two years. But
okay.
Yeah, he's been around the organization all over the place. You know.
Oh yeah, you're counting the lockouts. You're counting that shortened season. Well, I guess you could say 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd probably say a year and a half, maybe. Because that's
very
short.
But yeah, but you know that counts as a full season, even though it was really a half a season.
Yeah,
that's all we played. So
right,
it's a weird season. we're messing up everybody's statistics. Everybody, especially the great players who had streaks of, you know, I don't know, knocking on, 100 runs or you know, hitting 30 home runs or winning 20 games. They mess up everybody's statistics, and now we have the lockout. So, obviously, there was people criticizing the Yankees, like, oh, they haven't made any big moves, you know. Biggest move they made so far was signing Jose Peraza, who, you know, he had a good year with the Mets off the bench, had a lot of clutch hits. But, you know the Yankees are always – in the hunt of doing something. I mean, Trevor Story is still out there. Correa is out there, who – Marcus Stroman, the new Cub, he's courting Correa to come to.
How do you feel about that?
You mean about Stroman?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I thought he was a good pitcher for us. I would have liked him to have, stayed and been like a third or another option. But, you know, even in the beginning of the offseason, he's been, saying like, Cubs is a great place to play for. Then he's talking about all these other teams. And then afterwards, most recently when the Mets were really zeroing in on Scherzer, reportedly, he liked a comment from a fan who was insinuating that the Mets were, are racist because they're pursuing all these other players and not him, And then he also was saying like, I think it stems from him saying like, that I guess he felt the type of way that, they were pursuing all these other pitchers and they weren't going after him,
Mm-hmm.
But, he signed a 3-year, $71 million contract. He did thank the organization and the fans, but, he's going to Cubs. He said he never played, I think, in Wrigley Field, so I could have thought he did last year, but I guess not. But so best of luck to him. Hopefully, he won't the Mets, a game or in the playoff, especially in the playoffs. So we'll see what happens with that. Of course, you got Syndergaard and Loop, the best reliever that the Mets have, going to Anaheim,
yeah.
And apparently. Steven Matz playing the Mets, Trevor Bauer style. Apparently, reportedly, he was, his agent reached out to Cohen and the Mets and basically said he would be interested in a reunion with the Mets, obviously because he grew up being a Mets fan and, he was in the system his whole career until he got traded last year. And he had a great season with Toronto, winning 14 games. So the Met, there was interest, mutual interest between both of them. And then apparently once he got, he signed with the Cardinals, Cohen went on Twitter and was basically saying that he was PO'd, that the agent lied to him that he would have a last chance opportunity to match any deal to ensure that Matz returns as a Met. And then, him pursuing Scherzer intensified. And, of course, that's what got us to the Scherzer situation. But, what's your thoughts on the current state of the Yankees and who you think they'll go after and who do you want them to go after to improve this?
Well,
if this lockout gets lifted up, of course.
I mean, we definitely have to – add some pitching, definitely. I would have loved Scherzer on the Yankees, but I'm hearing maybe it's possible the Yankees could even go after another Houston Astro. I mean, they already got Gerrit Cole, but they might go after Verlander. So you could possibly see Verlander in a Yankee uniform. And you heard about that several years ago. Remember when there was rumors that Verlander might, you know, maybe coming from the Tigers to the Yankees, but he ended up going to the Astros instead.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if he can still pitch and be effective as an ace, yeah, I would love him on the Yankees. You know, have that 1-2 punch of him and Gerrit Cole. That'd be great.
Well,
still have to see what, you know, what, yeah, go ahead.
No, continue. I'll finish what I'm saying after what you said.
No, yeah, we'll still have to see if he has the stuff. I mean, have you heard any news? Has he signed?
Yeah, well, yes and no. Well, a few weeks ago he signed, like a week or two ago he signed. He re-signed with Astros, 1 year, $25 million. However, even though he agreed to the deal, he didn't officially sign with them before the lockout. So there's this weird technicality of whether or not he's still, if the agreement counts or whatnot. So right now he's, you know, he did agree with a 1 year, $25 million deal to return with the Astros. But now that the lockout happened and they didn't, you know, make the signing official, now there's questions whether or not if the deal, the agreement is now null and void. So yeah, that's something to monitor, you know.
I'm reading here, it's not official, it looks like. So it looks like the Astros deal was never announced and it's presumably is not official. What does that mean?
That's crazy. I mean, let's see if the Yankees can jump on this opportunity and pull a Steve Cohen and over, overpay to get a guy of Verlander's caliber to come over to the Yankees.
Yeah. And also I would have loved a guy like Javier Baez coming to the Yankees, you know, he helped you guys out last year, but if we could have got him, put him at shortstop, then move Torres to second base. And yeah, I think that would have been a great tandem in the infield, but Baez went up. He ended up signing with
the Tigers.
With the Tigers, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh yeah, how do you feel about that, him going to the Tigers, by the way?
Yeah, I mean, this one, you know, kind of hurts because I thought for sure he would come back, have that double play tandem with his, you know, his buddy, Lindor. You know, his nickname is El Mago, but now the magic is gone. You know, now he went to Tigers. You know, I would have liked him to return, but he took his talents to the Motown. You know, he's gonna try to get a hit like he's, you know, the Supremes or Temptations over there. So we'll see what happens, you know, with him over there. But yeah, I thought for sure he's gonna come back and you know solidify that double play combination he had with that small sampling we had last year. But yeah, hopefully we can get his former teammate Chris Bryant to come over here, and Chris Bryant can play third, and then in a few years, once Beatty and I'm trying to think of the other third base prospect they have. There's Beatty and I think Vientos. You know, once those guys get called up, you know, Bryant can go into the outfield and showcase his versatility, you know, like he has in the past, you know. So I definitely think Bryant is the last piece of the puzzle if they can sign him, hopefully, and then improve the rotation. Maybe sign that Rondon guy, and I'm trying to think what other pitchers are out there. But yeah, they definitely, I think they've been interested in that Japanese pitcher from I think Mariners, Kuichi, I think his name was. I forgot. Yeah, I mean, his numbers wasn't that good last year, but, you know, they think maybe, you know, with a good pitching coach, you know, his numbers can, will improve dramatically. I mean, his numbers haven't, was improving, but you know, he has potential to be a better pitcher. So that's another guy they were thinking about. Oh, and speaking of a Japanese pitcher, I don't know if you heard Masahiro Tanaka. He's remaining in Japan for another year.
Yeah. Well, you know, I would have loved to keep him last year, but Yankees made the decision not to bring him back. So it is what it is.
Yeah. Maybe he'll come back next year, 2023.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see.
Let me see. What other – I'm trying to think of any other moves that happened. I can't really think of anything else, any other move in baseball. Somebody sign a deal? Oh, yeah, Seager. Seager, I think, signed with the Texas Rangers.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, that's a big move right there.
That's a good move for them.
You know, for them for sure. So, yeah, we'll definitely keep you guys posted on – you know, what happens in, well, once this lockout is officially gone and hopefully Mets can hire a manager, hopefully a manager with experience like the ones I've mentioned earlier today. Yeah, we'll see.
The search continues.
Yeah, the search continues. Hopefully we can. And speaking of switching gears, speaking of a team that needs to be locked up, the New York Knicks, man. They need to be locked up for a team impersonating the New York Knicks, man. Like, this team gave us false hope, you know. I mean, obviously, it's still early. You know, at one point, this team was the number one team in the East, and now they drop all the way down, and they're under 500. They can't even win at MSG, which, you know, we saw firsthand when they made Ricky Rubio and Jared Allen seem like they're the 1972 Lakers, you know, just, you know, being up on us.
Yep. Yeah, I don't know what's going on with the Knicks, man. I mean, and it falls on the coach, Tibbs. And Tibbs,
yeah,
you know, he's a good coach and all, but his rotations have been off. I don't know if Kemba Walker said something about his mother or something. That's caused them not to play, but right now, Kemba Walker is not in the rotation at all. I mean, this guy is benched. He hasn't played at all in these last several games, and it sounds like the Knicks might trade him.
Yeah, if you have a veteran guy like that, a guy who's been in the league for like 10 years, your biggest marquee signing that you had, he was the big marquee signing, you know, about his homecoming, finally putting on the Knicks uniform. He was the big deal, you know.
Yeah.
You know, he was the sort of signing, you know, for the Knicks. You know, a guy who's a talented guy, who's clutch, and Fournier was supposed to be like the Robin of you know, of the signing. You know, Fournier, you know, he's, you know, offensively, he lives up to the hype. You know, he's knocking down threes. This Knicks team, man, they can't play no defense. Randall keeps turning the ball over. The next game, he missed some free throws, back-to-back free throws, and then, you know, of course, the refs missed some calls. Apparently, they said that how, you know, they didn't call those calls, you know, Randall getting fouled is because he's stronger than everybody else and they didn't notice him getting hurt. So my question to them is, would you have preferred him to be like those wimpy players who flops around every time someone sneezes on them and act like, you know, they got shot, you know, from a cannon or something? Like, I mean, what is he supposed to do? Like, you shouldn't penalize the guy because he's stronger. He can withhold. He can handle contact. If he's fouled, he's fouled. That's it. And then after the game, they admit that they made some bad calls. Like, it's too little, too late, man. The Nets got the W.
because, yes, Randall's strong, and, I mean, yeah, he does initiate contact as a bigger guy, but still, a foul is a foul.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether he's a big guy or a small guy, you have to call it.
Exactly.
You know, regardless if he's stronger than any other person. So,
yeah.
It doesn't make any sense, but
so
he's probably going to end up getting fined for his comments after the game.
So let me get this straight. So let's say Shawn Michaels ran onto the court and super kicked Randall, and he doesn't fall to the floor. They're still not going to call it because he's stronger, right, by that logic? Like, I mean, come on. Like, what are they doing? What is the NBA doing? This reminds me of that play that Utley did on Ruben Tejada and broke his legs.
Yeah.
Everybody thought it was a dirty play, but they didn't suspend him. And afterwards, once it, you know, I think it cost the Mets the only game against the Dodgers that year. And then afterwards, you know, the Mets end up winning that series. But then the umpires and Joe Torre, who was like the disciplinarian of the commissioner's office, you know, they all agree that they missed the call, but it was too little too late. It cost them a game. And essentially Ruben Tejada's career, because he was never the same player again after what happened. I mean, it's like, what's up with these refs, man? Like, and refs and umpires, like, just call the game. Fair and square. It doesn't matter if the person who initiated the contact or the recipient of the contact, the perpetrator or the recipient of the contact is a star player. You have to call it right down the middle. Like, it don't make no sense for you to penalize somebody based on their size or popularity.
Yeah,
after all,
I mean,
justice is supposed to be blind, right? So, come on.
You know, the thing with Randall, he does have a point about the contact and the fouls thing, but still, he complains way too much.
Yes, he does.
To the refs. And also, he turns the ball over a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why Tibbs continues to have the ball in his hand at times when he turns the ball over a lot. I think he's averaged close to 4 turnovers a game, I think. But,
And that's why, you know, I like Randall, but I'm not in love with him as the Knicks, you know, leader. You know what I mean? Normally a guy like, you know, a player in that position, I'd be like, you know, I'm all for him. You know what I mean? You know, don't get me wrong, I'm not against him, you know, but I think he has too many flaws, you know, in order to be like a guy who we could see as a championship caliber guy who will take us to the promised land. Could he be a third option on a championship caliber team on the Knicks? Oh, yeah, I definitely think so.
Yeah.
If you're counting on him to be the clutch guy who's going to just take us there, I don't see it. You know,
he disappears also.
He does. And unfortunately, you know, that happened in the playoffs against the Hawks, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a new experience for him. You know, this was his first year as an all-star, you know. So, I mean, last year was the year where he finally, you know, put it all together, you know, living up to his potential and being the most improved player, you know, which he, you know, was well-deserved, you know, by him. But, yeah, he just needs to improve his game. Barrett needs to improve his game, you know, shooting as well. And, the Knicks, man, they just can't win. They can't win at home. They couldn't win at home even if they start the game with a 100-point, you know, lead advantage to start the game the way how they play.
This Garden year, they want to go crazy for the Knicks and excited for the season, but Knicks aren't giving them anything to be excited about right now.
Exactly. The Knicks fans think they're going to experience going to a Knicks game is like Christmas morning, but all they keep getting is a lump of coal in the fourth quarter. They can't hold on to the lead. They literally can't hold on to the lead. Like, even if the other team is missing baskets, they're going on a cold streak, and then the other team, you know, think they're Steve Nash or Ray Allen or Reggie Miller, you know, against us, like, knocking down threes. Like, it was ridiculous. And then Djokovic and all, you know, the Denver Nuggets, they whipped our butts in a Saturday matinee today, you know. I mean, the Knicks, man, they just, I don't even know what else to say, man.
We're now under 500, I think, now, right?
I know. Yeah, this is the first time all year we're under 500. We're 11 and 12, wow. And then we're like 5-7 at MSG.
Wow, and didn't we start the season 3-1?
Yeah, we definitely did.
Wow.
It was on a roll, and then we got steamrolled over. It's messed up, man. You know, we want, like you said, man, we want to be hyped. We want to be, you know, we want to jump up and down and throw our arms around this team and be like, you know, hey, man, we're here for you guys, man. Just, you know, play some D and show up in the fourth quarter. It's like the Knicks of the past, you know. Prior to last year, they just can't play any defense. It doesn't matter if they're up by 20 or down by 20. No lead is safe. Even if they're up by 20, they blow the lead.
I played more defense in Columbia than the Knicks are playing right now.
Shoot, I mean, that alien from Rise of the Skywalker, that armless mechanic alien, slug alien, played more defense than the Knicks. You know. So I mean, it's crazy. It's just, man. We'll just hopefully next week, you know, then you know we'll be able to talk more positive about the Knicks. And then you know on the flip side, you know the Nets, you know there's rumors with the Nets maybe trying to trade Kyrie, and of course you know they got the victory against us, you know. Yeah, man, I mean, what else can you say, you know? They'll just have to eventually trade Kyrie and try to get another big three because, it's just a distraction. What's your thought? You're still here?
I guess he's speechless. In any case, sorry about that. My phone timed out there. No, I was saying that, Kyrie thing, the Nets are flourishing right now without him, even though they lost tonight against the Bulls. But, I mean, they're doing well with just Harden and Durant at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But if they do trade Kyrie, I think you could probably trade him for John Wall. Because right now, I mean, rumors that John Wall, is it Washington? That's the current team he's on, right?
He used to be on Washington.
The Rockets, I think.
Yeah, I think he's on Rockets.
Yeah, Rockets. So you could trade John Wall for Kyrie straight up. I think that would work. You know,
yeah, there's even rumors that maybe even Knicks might trade him straight up for Kemba Walker.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know,
well,
Knicks would probably have to get more.
Yeah, I think we'd have to give up more. Maybe I think, maybe they were thinking maybe Knox or maybe I don't remember if they said Mitchell Robinson, but yeah, I think there would have to be maybe 3 to 4 players that would go back to
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know how well, you know, I haven't seen Wall play in a while. Is he even playing right now? I think he's injured or something, right?
I don't think he's playing.
Yeah.
I think I think they're wondering whether he's going to get a buyout or whatnot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because he's making 44 this year, 47 million next year.
It's a lot of money.
Yes. Mhm. Yeah, that's. Mhm. Yeah, it's gonna be like 34 million that they're gonna just
be not even be able to use because he's not even playing. So,
yeah.
But yeah, shifting gears. With the Jets. The Jets, they're gonna be hosting the Eagles. You know, a game I guess you're gonna have vested interest that, you know, hope somehow the Jets can pull off a victory here, against your Eagles.
My Eagles?
Well, your rival Eagles, I should say. Your rival Eagles. You know, basically, Wilson didn't have a good game, but the Jets, you know, the defense, they had some sacks, you know, that led them to the victory. So they're gonna hope that they could stop the Eagles. What do you think is gonna happen?
The Jet defense, to stop Jalen Hurts. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to stop the Boston Scott, I should say. Bart Scott. Boston Scott. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to stop their receivers. I mean, you know, the Jet defense is going to have to improve. The Jet defense has been horrific this year, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, they've had, I think, three games where they gave up at least 40 points, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, but most of all, they're going to have to stop Jalen Hurts, you know, because he's the guy that makes the Eagles go. And you know, they're going to have to stop his speed, don't allow him to run, and don't allow him to make big plays. If they don't do that, then it's going to be a long day for the Jets. And Jets just got to get going on offense. You know, right now their offense is not – it hasn't been clicking. I mean,
yeah,
they haven't done much in recent weeks. I mean, they've had some games where they look okay here and there, but
it was on with Wilson.
Yeah.
With Flacco.
Yeah.
And that other rookie, you know, they kept them in the game.
Right.
Wilson, you know, they did win this game, even though he had an interception. He was not doing a Madden-like performance.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully he can bounce back at home against the Eagles. We'll definitely keep you posted with that. And then, of course, you have the Giants facing the Dolphins in Miami. And the Dolphins, four in a row. Cut off of them, so.
Yeah, that's going to be I think they're both teams are evenly matched. I mean, they almost have the same record. Giants are 4-7, Dolphins are 5-7. So, I mean, they mirror each other in the same way. I don't know. This one's going to be a close game, I think, tomorrow. Yeah, I think it's going to come down to a field goal. But I think Daniel Jones might be out tomorrow as well. So if that's going to be the case, then, you know, we're going to have to establish a running game. Hopefully Saquon Barkley is good to go, and hopefully the Giants can win it. But, it's going to be a close game, I think.
Yeah, you're definitely going to have to stop Tagovailoa, you know.
Yeah, the quarterback, Dolphins.
So,
yeah.
And if you guys need a chance – you know, have a chance of winning this game, and Dolphins they're gonna try to sweep New York after defeating the Jets a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Now they're gonna try to beat the Giants about 2 weeks later.
Yep.
But yeah, shifting gears, man. I guess we'll talk WWE, and then we'll go into the Ghostbuster film. Oh, but before we do that, do you have any suggestions for the fantasy football?
Oh, yes, right. Let me pull up my fantasy
football starts for week 13 here. Let me see. Okay, so 13, I'm going with quarterback Jalen Hurts versus New York Jets, running back Antonio Gibson versus Raiders, wide receiver Michael Pittman against the Colts, Michael Pittman against the Texans, tight end Logan Thomas against the Raiders, kicker Greg Joseph against the Lions, and defense special teams Colts versus the Texans. That's my week 13 fantasy starts.
Thanks for that, Mac.
Yep, no problem.
And yeah, thinking of switching gears, you know, fantasy matchups. The WWE, yet again, they botched another one. You know, we all knew that Sami Zayn didn't have a chance against Roman Reigns, but at least, you know, we thought he would have a pay-per-view event, you know, that he'd actually compete in. You know, that day one pay-per-view event, which is going to debut New Year's Day. And, you know, it would have been Roman Reigns versus Sami Zayn, who has been saying for the past couple of years that, you know, that there's a conspiracy against him for him not to be a champion or get any airtime. And he's proven himself right, because Brock Lesnar forced him to use his number one contendership instead of on January 1st, but on Friday Night SmackDown, and basically he wasted his opportunity and lost to Roman Reigns in the main event of Friday Night SmackDown. And, you know, prior to that, you know, in that episode, he was taken to Suplex City, you know. So, yeah, and that was another thing about last week, is that they took all his momentum of him winning the number one contendership just for, you know, Kayla, you know, Braxton, to announce that the suspension was lifted, you know, which now it's kind of contradictory, because, you know, last week they just said, oh, you know, the suspension has been lifted. And then on Monday, Friday Night SmackDown, Michael Cole says that he paid the $1 million fine, which, I mean, I don't know. It just seemed like something that was added on, you know, to try to tie it back to the whole $1 million fine. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. But have you noticed Brock has been really good on the mic without Paul Heyman? Notice that?
Yeah, he's improved. You know, he's talked. He knows his limitations. He talks a little bit. He engages the crowd, and you know, he doesn't go on long promo stuff. You know, he just short and sweet, and you know, down to business.
Yeah, the Sami Zayn segment was funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. I think he learned something from that R-Truth segment. Because that R-Truth segment is what really, like, you know, made him break out of his shell.
Yeah.
Even as a heel, when R-Truth, you know, took the tough task, making him laugh, breaking character without him even realizing it, you know.
But right now, I mean, Brock Lesnar, I don't even consider him a heel. He's like a tweener right now, I guess.
No, he's definitely a babyface right now, because, you know, he's feuding with Roman Reigns. He's no longer with Paul Heyman.
Yeah.
And Roman Reigns is a heel, so now, yeah.
But he still has that heelish, you know, I don't know, he still has that intimidating heelish presence.
Which is good, which is great, because, you know, WWE, normally when they turn a heel babyface, they make them watered down, like, especially like Diesel's initial run in WWE back in the 90s, you know, they tend to, you know, what people loved about the bag, you know, the heels, they turn them into a baby face and just make them smile around and make them lose their edge, you know, so. Yeah, you know.
You're like a guy like Stone Cold back in the day, you know.
Yeah, you stole it right from my, I was just about to say that as well, you know. Stone Cold was a heel, and then of course they had that the WrestleMania WrestleMania 13 when him and Brett did the double turn, you know.
Yeah.
That was probably the first effective turn into a babyface when you think about it, because he still kept the same attitude, you know, that he had as a heel, but he's getting cheered for it, you know.
Sure.
And that's what you got to do when you have a popular heel. You turn him babyface. He has to keep that intensity. You can't make him, you know, turn his character completely around. His babyface turn, him turning into a good guy, you know, it has to make sense, you know.
Yeah, even Randy Orton is another guy that's like
Yeah.
I mean, he's always been like a tweener.
His mic skills improved too.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, props to both of those guys. That, you know, from the Attitude Era / Ruthless Aggression Era, that's stepping up their game. You know, so yeah, I'm trying to think what else happened on Raw. Oh yeah, Kevin Owens. You know, he tricked Seth Rollins to attacking him during the Roman Reigns Big E match. So now it's going to be a triple threat match between all three men for the WWE title. No surprise there. I'm trying to think. So yeah, the pay-per-view event is called Day One, and I'm like,
it's on New Year's Day. Yeah.
Is this technically a Uso / Bloodline pay-per-view event, theme pay-per-view event? Because, you know, Uso's theme song says, you know they're the Day One ish and all this stuff, and then of course, you know, the Bloodline says, you know, they're the ones, and they point the one finger. Like, is this also like Day One, as in Day One as in New Year's Day, the first day of the year, but is it also subliminally Bloodline / Uso pay-per-view event, you know?
Could have a double meaning, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Because when you think about it, you know, that wouldn't be the first time that, you know, the Bloodline, someone in their Bloodline has a pay-per-view event. If you remember, the Rock back in the days had a Rock Bottom pay-per-view event.
Right.
So maybe it could be coincidence, or maybe, because they are defending their tag team titles against the New Day with a returning Kofi Kingston this past Friday night. So,
This is the first New Year's Day pay-per-view since New Year's Resolution. No, New Year's Revolution, I should say.
Yeah, but was it on New Year's Day?
New Year's Evolution, I should say.
No, I think it was Resolution. No, Revolution, I think it was back in the days.
Was it Resolution? I thought it was Evolution.
No, I think it was Revolution. Let me type this
up.
Let me check this out.
Okay. Revolution or Evolution?
No, I think it was Revolution.
Okay, maybe it was Revolution.
Yeah, it is Revolution.
Okay.
Let me see, when was these pay-per-views? Yeah, but these pay-per-views weren't on the 1st of July, though.
You mean January?
I mean January, right. Yeah, it's exactly my fault.
Yeah.
All right, let me just make sure, because I'm pretty sure they didn't have... This is the first time they're having a pay-per-view event on New Year's Day.
Right.
They usually
right.
give the people, you know, they usually are fair enough.
They're like a week.
You know, give them time off, not have a pay-per-view on the same day, because it's like they have them working on Christmas now and New Year's Day. It's like they literally have no time off. So, yeah, the Revolution pay-per-view event was debuted in January 9, 05, then January 8 of 06, and then January 7 of 07. So, yeah, now this Day One pay-per-view event is literally on the first of the you know, New Year's Day, which that's like, I really think that's unfair. Like, you can't give these guys you know, the day off. Like, it's ridiculous.
It's on a Saturday too, I think, right?
I'm gonna have to find out.
I believe it's on a Saturday.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah, it is on a Saturday. You're right. So it's not even a Sunday pay-per-view. It's a Saturday pay-per-view. Like, this seems shoehorned. You know, it's the first day, and day one, new day. You know, it's a new day. It's a new year. Is this another? Could this also play on that also? Like, I mean, yeah, I mean, what can you do, man? You know. WWE, man, they have not been making good decisions for the past couple of years, especially all these firings, you know, that we mentioned, Keith Lee and Karrion Kross, guys who won the NXT titles and all that stuff. Like, it's just an utter joke with the state of WWE. Man, like, I didn't even watch NXT because not that NXT is bad, it's just, you know, WWE doesn't even know how to use these people. Like, they, you know, they work their heart, you know, their butt off to, you know, to make, you know, to entertain the fans and get paid. And then, you know, the creative don't know what to do with them and cut them for no reason. Like, Bray Wyatt is still a free agent. Like, does that make sense? Like, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, I just feel disenfranchised with WWE right now because it's like, they talk about, you know, oh, you know, reaching for the brass rings, but when people are sincerely, like Cesaro and all these other people are, like, trying to, are actually doing that, getting over with the fans, or even Zack Ryder, like, 10 years ago, when they do reach for the brass rings, you know, Vince McMahon just pulls the ladder right from under them and then get them future endeavored. Like,
yeah.
It's just a joke. But it is what it is. I'm trying to think. I guess shifting gears to AEW. I can't even think what happened on AEW. Sting. He fought. Sting and Darby Allin teamed up against the Gun Club, which has Billy Gunn and his sons on it. I think Colton and Austin Gunn are his son's names. And Sting had his first match in Atlanta in like 14 years. And, you know, they got the victory. Cody Rhodes, he was in a tag team like against Malakai Black and Andrade. Try to remember who he teamed up with. I can't remember who he teamed up with. Let me see. What was that again? Let's see. So. Oh yeah. Oh, it was just against Andrade. In that Atlanta Street Fight. So here's what happened on Dynamite. You had Bryan Danielson defeated Allen Five Angels. CM Punk defeated Lee Moriarty. Wardlow defeats AC Adams. Darby Allin and Sting defeat the Gun Club, like I mentioned. Ruby Soho defeats Chris Statlander to advance in the TBS Championship Tournament. Cody Rhodes had that hardcore match, the Atlanta Street Fight match, which had Cody's wife, Brandy, set a table on fire as Cody Rhodes does like a Falcon Arrow. Oh, what was it? I think it was a regular suplex, super, you know, the top rope suplex, you know, off the top rope into the, you know, through the table, and then got the pinfall over, you know, Cody Rhodes. Yeah, and before that match, I think it was,
Andrade, I think it was Andrade or Malachi, who caused Arn Anderson to fall off the entrance area, like the rampway. And then Bryan Danielson, he's going to be facing Hangman Adam Page next month as well in a pay-per-view for Daniel Bryan to have his first opportunity, you know, as the AEW champion, potentially, if he wins that match. And then, let's see. And then on Rampage, you had Sammy Guevara retaining the TNT championship against Tony Nese. Jade Cargill defeating Jenai Kai, and FTR defeating Pac and Pentagon Jr. Yeah, so, I guess that's basically it. But before we head out, let's give you our thoughts on the pay-per-view, not the pay-per-view event, the Ghostbusters Afterlife movie. Thoughts, Matt, before I give you mine.
I mean, it was a great reboot. One of the best reboots I've ever seen. And, yeah, they brought back all the cast from the original movies, the actors. They even did some flashbacks from the original films. I mean, there was no flaw that I could find this movie at all. And usually I'm a hard critic of movies, but this was like a absolute 10. Originally I rated it a 9, between a 9 and 9.5, but after rethinking about it, I got to give it a 10. And, you know, I love the younger actors, you know, the girl who played Egon's granddaughter, and also a grandson, who's also in one of the main characters in Stranger Things. They did a phenomenal job. And, yeah, man, but it was just good to see Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, and Ernie Hudson reprise their roles again. And, you know, Harold Ramis, although he passed away, you know, there is a tribute to him in this film. So you got to just go watch it to see what that is. But, yeah, man, it was a great film to watch from beginning to end. And it looks like we will be getting some more sequels in the future. So you shall wait and see.
Yeah, man, you hit everything right on the head. I agree with everything you said. Phenomenal movie. You know, exceed expectations. You know, this is the movie, you know, we waited 30 plus years to see. You know, we wanted to see what happened with the original Ghostbusters, you know. I like the 2016 movie where they had them pop up in different scenes as different characters. They actually came back as themselves, and this whole movie was, you know, a tribute to Harold Ramis and his portrayal as Egon, you know. The Ghostbuster who, you know, actor who passed away, I think in 2014. So the whole movie was essentially about him and his character, Egon's family, moving to Somerville, Oklahoma, and basically, you know, Egon's, you know, reputation was destroyed. You know, you're definitely gonna have to see the movie, see how everything went down. But yeah, I highly recommend the film. Perfect casting, you know. It was great to see the Ghostbusters are back. You know, Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Ernie Hudson, Sigourney Weaver reprising her role as Dana Barrett, and of course Annie Potts as Janine. You know, their longtime secretary. So it was a great movie. And then just like how what we assumed with the Force Awakening. Force Awakens, you know, you had the new cast blend with the old cast. But this was executed flawlessly. The actors, you know, they did a phenomenal job.
You know, Finn Wolfhard from the Stranger Things basically played a similar character to the character he plays on, you know, on the show. You had Makena Grace, who was the star of the whole movie, as Egon's granddaughter. Paul Rudd, I mean, he was Paul Rudd, basically. You know, he provided the comic relief. You know, he was the cool teacher that was, you know, along the ride with them. And, you know, Carrie Coon was on the main character's mother and Egon's daughter. I mean, it was just perfectly executed. To me, there was nothing more they could have done that could have better the movie. And then, of course, the tribute, you know, Chef's Kiss, man. It was just flawless, you know, the whole, you know, the scene. I'll just say the scene. If you've seen the movie, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So, yeah, hands down, definitely watch the film. If you've seen it already, watch it again. And if you've seen it two times, watch it a third time. Just keep watching this movie, and, you know, I just, you know, maybe, you know, I'll talk about this more in depth, spoil it more, at another time, maybe in a future, YouTube video, maybe. So, you know, stay tuned for that, and, yeah, I highly recommend it. You know, 0 to 10, you know, before I even saw the post credits, I was like, you know, this is a 10. Like, I can't complain with this movie. And then afterwards, they showed the post credits, which is alluding to future Ghostbuster movies, and maybe even a possible return of Viggo the Carpathian from the second film. So, yeah. This is 11 to me, but like from 0 to 10, this is 11. Sorry, math teachers. What can I say, man? I can't complain. So it is what it is, man. Go see the movie. It's worth the wait. We had to wait what 32 years for the sequel of Ghostbusters 2. And yeah, oh yeah. Like, let me give you the backstory. Yeah, Ghostbusters 2 was, like, the first one we've ever seen. I mean, you know, in theaters. That's, like, the movie I really wanted to see. I wanted to see the Batman movie, but, I don't think that. It took me several years to watch that. But for my birthday, like, that was, like, the first movie I wanted to see in theaters. And, you know, that's what, you know. So this franchise, you know, meant a lot to me as a kid. And watching, and the reason why I wanted to see the movie is because of the Ghostbuster cartoons that came on back in those days. It was like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and the Ghostbuster cartoons for back in the days I was really into. So,
oh yeah,
you know. So it was great to see what happened to, you know, our fellow friends, our fictional fellow friends from New York. So see what happened to them after all those years. So they're definitely. Highly recommend the film. So yeah, that's it. Anything else you'd like to say, Mac, before we ride off in Ecto-1?
Just check out my show, iMac. Check your local listings for that. It's every Saturdays at 10. And come back here, check out Sports and Religion every Saturdays at 11. Only on Block Talk Radio.
Alright, you heard the man. Check out his show, iMac. You know, check out my YouTube channel, Sports and Legend TV. You know, maybe I'll try to do a Ghostbuster review, spoilers on that one, hopefully in the future. And of course, come back here next week and check out the next episode of Sports Urban Legend, with Macaulay Matthew and of course me, William Ramo. So. Again, I'll see you guys next week, and have a wonderful and great weekend. Peace.
something weird, and it don't look too good. Who you gonna call? Ghostbusters! I ain't afraid of no ghost. Better